Hey, can I talk to you? Over 25 years ago, on September 29th, 1998, we watched a brainy girl with curly hair drop everything to follow a guy she only kind of knew all the way to college. And so began Felicity. My name is Juliette Littman, and I'm a Felicity superfan. Join me, Amanda Foreman, who you may know better as Megan, the roommate, and Greg Grunberg, who you may also know as Sean Blunberg, as the three of us revisit our favorite moments from the show and talk to the people who helped shape it. Listen now to Dear Felicity on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me in the studio, he just got done his shift at the QB factory. It's Andy Greenwald!
Do you think that the diehard Baranskis and the lovely civilians that listen to us are going to get that reference?
Well, for the people that it hits for, it hits deep. You know what I mean? And that's that's what I always try to do, is just throw a little bit of like crumbs to the real rabid Kenny Pickett
right
people who also watched Manhunt on Apple TV.
Throwing crumbs is, I believe, how Ben Solak referred to Kenny Pickett's QB
style. Well, crumbs
style
are about all he can pick up because his hands are so small.
Oh, he has Joey B hands?
He has, what do you mean Joey B hands?
Joe Burrow famously has small hands.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he has big other things that make up for his small hands, but that was the knock on him coming out of hearts. He has two hearts. But the knock on him, I believe, was that he had tiny little...
I never read that draft eval that suggested that.
Really? But, you didn't see that on Newsmax? Where you get all your Joe Burrow information?
It's starting early for you.
Look, I think that generally, and obviously we're going to talk about television and other things, but yeah. I think that's an interesting idea that, you know, our show might not be for everyone,
uh-huh,
but it's for five or six ones.
For five or six people, that's just like, I can't believe I've been waiting my whole life for these two guys to make Kenny Pickett jokes before they get into Tobias Menzies programming. But
better than Tobias Harris programming.
We are going to talk about a little bit of TV news this week, and we're going to talk a little bit, actually quite a bit, I think, about Manhunt, which is the new show on mm-hmm. Apple TV about the hunt
for a man.
Who killed Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And Andy's got a lot of takes about... Just kidding. We're going to talk about that show. I really enjoyed what I've seen so far.
I got it. Before we get into it, can I ask you, and we might need special royal correspondent Kaya to jump in here, but like you guys
be careful. Tread lightly here.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
British libel laws are intense.
I'm just saying, I just drove, between when I left and arrived here at the studio this morning, there's been a ton of news.
Actually,
apparently.
It was last night. It's been going on since last night.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Since I left Earth last night and stopped looking at the feed, there's something going on in like the Royals.
There's rumors coming out of Buckingham Palace. Let's put it that way. Can we put it that way, Kaya? Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think like the most concrete evidence people have, and also admittedly, I'm not fully up to date as much as Chris seems to be, mm-hmm. is that like BBC turned like all of their like social icons like black or something. And like,
what?
There's just like rumors of a forthcoming announcement.
So so there's a rumor that...
This is actually how Three Body Problem starts, by the way.
there might be a royal... The king might be deceased. We don't know. So this might be old news. Here's the real question I want to ask you. And Kaya, prior to the events of the last... few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a royal watcher were you? Is this something that has been interesting to you?
I would say like loosely at best.
Yeah.
Okay. And you, but Chris, how about for you?
I mean, you know, it concerns my family. So
is it like a King Ralph situation?
Half of me is somewhat governed by this, you know, half of me is somewhat ruled by this.
But not in the, like in the sense of the John Goodman film.
No, I'm
like,
not in things... line for Succession. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just have no idea. I'm constantly shocked how interested people are. And I wonder if The Crown obviously boosted some interest in this.
Do you think people are constantly shocked by how interested we are in X-Men?
That's fair. That's helpful.
Yeah.
If you think of it as a fandom.
We have like.
With characters.
Such long conversations about Marvel.
This
characters.
Is really helpful to me. Because I think I don't understand it on just like an interest in foreign governance or quirks.
I'm interested in all sorts of foreign governments.
Okay, want to name a couple?
I mean, Macron. I'm interested in him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in Putin. I thought, you know, he put up quite an approval rating this weekend.
That was a robust showing. Yeah. I mean, you certainly have to hand it to
him. I'm interested in... Who's another government that I'm interested in? That guy in Argentina who's just like, we're going to do some things to the economy. That guy's a fucking madman.
You're interested in this. I love it. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'm the one that is not sufficiently paying attention.
Your entire worldview, it's just whatever Nithya governs here in Los Angeles.
I stay local.
Yeah,
that's where the real work happens.
How are you? How's your weekend? Did you watch a lot of content?
You know, I wish I could sit here and lie to you, but no. Okay. No, I didn't. I mean, I watched Manhunt on Apple TV Plus.
I can't wait to talk to you about it.
But I feel like our listeners should know that you are remember those kids who would read ahead?
Yeah.
Do a little extra reading? You're one of those kids now.
I don't want to get too far into Three Body Problem because we're going to discuss it on Thursday show. The series goes up in its entirety on Thursday. Sometimes when we get screeners for something, I'll try to pace myself because I don't want to be having fake conversations about the second episode of a series when I'm like, I know what happens in the fifth, you know? I like to kind of keep that sense of week-to-week conversation. Not a problem with Netflix series since they go up all at once.
Right.
So it's really there for the taking. And, you know, I won't be spoiling anything, but I will say that I have found it very binge-worthy.
That's cool.
And unexpectedly, my wife got really into it. So we had a really good time watching it and we're almost done.
Wow.
And I can't wait to see what people think of it.
I'm excited about it. I also just want to really reaffirm...
And this is David Benioff and Dan Weiss's... A return to sort of long-form television storytelling after a couple of years away.
I just wanted to affirm to our audiences that if you feel like disenfranchised by Chris's, you know, just voracious television appetite, I promise you, I will never watch ahead.
But you're always good at having takes on the news.
Yeah. As long as it's domestic, apparently.
As long as it happens from from the Whole Foods on Rowena to the Whole Foods in Pasadena.
Yeah, that's about accurate.
Yeah. I did want to ask you a little bit
by
about...
By the way, in this economy, it's the Trader Joe's on Hyperion, the Trader Joe's on Colorado, but please.
The biggest sort of TV news that came out since we've last recorded is the... Deadline story about the Bear shooting season 4 concurrently with season 3. So they're currently in production on season 3. They could already be on to 4 for all I know.
They work really fast.
And that they were going to shoot these two things. Now, I think that the most obvious reason for this would be because Jeremy Allen White and Iota Berry and Eben all have probably very busy shooting schedules.
Suddenly, they definitely all do.
And that this is probably the best way to get for the Bear to stay on its honestly prodigious sort of shoot towards the end of the beginning of a year.
They like, they're creatures of habit. They really like
and
having
in
this.
June. So they've basically had two back-to-back summer releases of what is it, like 10 episodes per season?
Yeah. But they've done this we've talked about it before. We've talked about it with Chris Storer, but they write really fast and then they go into production in February and the show is on our Hulu machines by June.
If I had to guess,
yeah,
without having talked to Chris Storer at all about this and having no inside information and really nothing to add to the conversation, but
sure,
just speculating, I would like to think that they're doing 3 and 4 and that there will probably be a longish gap between 4 and if there is a 5.
Yeah, because I believe Chris has said to us and to other outlets that initially they had conceived 3, that they had enough story,
yes,
they felt
he
for
said
three
that
seasons.
To us. He said that to us. He was like, I have the 3 seasons,
yep,
planned. Yeah.
I think that's right. Right. I think that, for people, I imagine other people in hashtag this town are looking at Chris and his team being like, you're making us look bad here. Like, you are so, 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 so efficient and so productive that, you know, I can't imagine that this was anything other than something that they were clearly very comfortable with and eager to do. What we don't know, we don't know a couple things. Like, this broke in a way that feels a little bit sideways to the narrative that the
network... I think
network,
it had been starting to get reported around Chicago that they were still shooting.
Right. And I think the residents of Chicago, like me, believe that local news stays local. And that this idea of stories getting aggregated and picked up needs to go away.
Yeah.
But to be clear... Deadline and then Variety, they sort of reported this, but got no official confirmation from Chris, from FX, from anybody. Nothing more to read into it other than the fact that I don't know if anyone was doing this, but I would not assume anything. FX wasn't like, this isn't like when NBC was like, please supersize all episodes because we're flailing.
Yeah.
I do not think this is them saying, can you just give us more content? We're desperate for
it. I think they were probably like, if we miss a certain window with Fantastic Four shooting schedules,
right,
and things like that, like, we're just not going to be able to get everybody back together in any kind of like timely fashion to do 4.
And I think that's actually the most interesting way to look at this, because we have been, complaining isn't the word, certainly noting and feeling the effects of contemporary television's inability to stay on a more traditional yearly release schedule. Now, there have been many good reasons for that in terms of people make the story when they're ready to tell the story. Even, 10, 15 years ago with the Pantheon shows of that era, sometimes there wouldn't be a Sopranos for a while or Mad Men. It didn't stick to a exact same month every year scenario that gave people time to do other projects or to like recharge their batteries. But increasingly, the way TV works, it's very haphazard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Bears' consistency plays a significant part in its continuing to mushroom in success.
Yeah.
And by mushroom, I was thinking of when Olivia Colman was peeling the mushrooms, of course. And not just in terms of the show success, but in the star-making properties of the show that are the reason why they need to get this done now. Because those 3 in particular have very full dance cards.
I'll be really interested to see how the creative team of The Bear manages one of The Bear's great assets, which is its emotional intensity, which is difficult to sustain over the course of multiple seasons. Like, so you have to imagine with a 3-season plan in mind, and, you watch the second season and it has incredible highs and incredible, like, warm moments. Our episode of the year, Forks, for instance. But it also has these just, like, anxious, emotionally draining episodes like Fishes, like the last episode of the season with Carmi and in the walk-in. And it's, you kind of are like, is there a sustainable model emotionally for that show past like 4 seasons? Like, I think that there is, but it may not be the one that we've kind of like grown accustomed to, right?
I would not be surprised. Yeah, I don't know what the future would hold, but I do feel like...
It's hard to imagine a Bear episode that's like, that was a pretty good Wednesday. See you guys later.
Totally. That's baked in.
Yeah.
Like, they're here for an amazing time, not a long time, is baked into almost every episode of the show, I think. But I would say it would stand to reason that because they are very keenly attuned to how the... Let me put in a metaphor that you would understand. So then the way that you can sort of modulate the amount of nicotine in each Zin pouch, right? Like, there's some are 3, some are 6, or there's super big gulps, right? Like, with a lot of nicotine that you haven't dabbled with yet.
No.
I feel like Chris and Joanna and their whole team, like, they're aware of how long people can be eating this rich food.
Yes.
So I think it's probably possible to imagine a world where splitting the season or doing extra episodes is in almost a natural response to the intensity of what they have planned.
Yeah.
That they could that way put in a few palate cleanser episodes or break up the coursing, if you will. But honestly, just even having this conversation totally off of like a two paragraph variety story just made me excited that it's a relevant conversation. I felt like, and obviously the pandemic delayed it, but even Succession, which was one of the last shows that we were so excited about to cover religiously and regularly, took a long time. You know, we were speculating about what the next season would be for so long. And we're going to find out relatively soon what they're cooking up.
What else is coming in June? Because there's a bunch of stuff that's coming both before the Emmy deadline.
Right.
And then there's stuff that, I mean, like, we really do have a flood of material. Like, between House of the Dragon, I think, is in June as well, right?
House of the Dragon is this summer. They're missing the deadline, I believe.
Right. And then there's also Acolyte, the Star Wars show, right?
Acolyte, which is Leslie Headland's Star Wars show, was finally given a premiere date. I think it's June 4th. That has been in development for a really long time. And so long, in fact, that it's almost come full circle. Because I remember sitting here with you, actually not here with you, because I don't know if Spotify was involved in our professional life back then. But basically, that Lucasfilm's decision to hire Leslie Headland to write and direct...
That was definitely back at Sunset Gower.
I think it was. Yeah. But I think that we were very excited about that as a sign that... And we didn't even know what the show was going to be about. But it felt like a sign of seriousness of purpose that Lucasfilm had for the TV expansion of Star Wars, that they were going to do, you know, that thing that we're always hoping people do, which is empower creators that you like and trust to tell the story that they want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Years have passed. And again, years passed because... Everything takes a long time to develop. I would imagine that they needed a while to sort of hone and choose their voice and what the show is going to look like, and then their special effects and all this. Now we know more about it, right? That I think it's High Republic era Star
right.
Wars.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite Republic eras is the High One.
I feel like historically we have advocated for Low Republic stuff, like boots on the ground. You know what I mean? Like that grimy... The grimy spice market version of the Republic. But okay, so anyway, we've now come full circle where our feelings about the direction of the larger Star Wars universe has been pretty skeptical.
Yeah.
And so now we're getting the show that once was the exemplar of their good decision-making. I'm interested.
Yeah. All right, is there anything else TV news-wise? I don't think so. We can kind of get into...
I know that you're pretty hype on this Cat in the Hat movie. First thing you said to me this morning.
I don't think it's fair that when you take off the record comments by me,
that was an off the record comment.
It's like I'm not Joe Biden. Sometimes you and I can just like chat.
I'm Evan Osnos. I'm reporting that you have a lot of vigor. I mean, has your speech slowed a little bit? Sure. You just hit me with this revamped Warner Brothers animation sets Cat in the Hat with Bill Hader, Quinta Brunson, Bowen Yang, and more. What more do you need?
Oh, wait. That was the other thing I was going to talk to you about, was that there was a Vulture blog post about Quinta Brunson wants to adapt. Oh, no. This was from a New Yorker profile. But Quinta Brunson wants to adapt The Guest.
That's sick. I love it.
That's all you got for me?
What do you want me to say? Kai and I love that book.
Do you want to star in it? Like, just show me something. Give me your dreams.
I think that we should... I mean, I think that the reason why this becomes a secondary story is because The Guest... The very good second novel by Emma Klein, which is about a sort of willowy blonde woman from the Midwest who sort of washes up on the Hamptons and then through a haze of like drugs and deception doesn't leave and tries to like stay there for a number of reasons. There's crime breathing down her neck. That this story, it's become a new story because a black creator like Quinta Brunson is like, let me get a piece of that. I want to do that story. And my answer to that is yes. In my High Republic voice, let's go. Books are great. And then when you choose to adapt them, you should choose to adapt them with the same sort of spirit of creativity and surprise that the books were written in the first place.
I can only hope that Dr. Seuss somewhere is like, I agree. And I trust Bill Hader to steer the Cat in the Hat into, you know.
No. You're getting this. Bill Hader isn't writing and directing it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Okay, so he's just a hired gun.
Ari Aster is making it.
He's just a hired cat.
He's voicing the cat in a cartoon, and you're acting. Yeah. So do you? You tried to distract me, and I respect it. Do you feel like this is a betrayal of the cultural capital accrued by the surprising success of Barry.
I hope that Bill Hader has something else up his sleeve. I would love to, for there to be another Bill Hader feature coming out aside from Cat in the Hat.
Do you know how little time voicing the Cat in the Hat in
Do you know how little time we have on this planet? Do we need more Dr. Seuss movies?
Yeah, sure. Oh, okay.
Aren't there like canonical adaptations of these things? Like enough
no, they're
of them?
Awful. Like the Mike Myers movies?
I don't know.
Burn those in a fire.
Okay.
Look at you just walking in talking about this stuff. We're walking down the hallway. You're like, I was like, you ever see The Lion King? The disdain dripping from your voice. You, no. What were you doing?
What was I doing?
Don't say it.
Turn 2. I was fucking making sure. You know what I mean?
I thought you meant you were a child. No, you mean you were turning a double play.
Yeah, what's that? When did that come out?
1992? Four? When's the original Lion King?
If it was 92, I was still playing travel baseball. If it was 94, I was editing the school paper. I was working on the school paper. I was getting to the bottom of things.
Buddy.
Yeah.
I was student council president.
Okay.
Okay. I was seeing Guided by Voices shows the Trocadero with you without realizing it. And I still had time to be like, ah, Siskel and Ebert say this is a worthwhile movie. I'll check it out. I will see this movie in the theater that will be nominated and win an Oscar.
Uh-huh.
Because I was grinding the culture then.
And now?
No.
Not so much.
Not so much. But I feel like I don't know if it's a badge of honor.
For me not to have seen Lion King. I'm aware of what happens in Lion King. I know about Scar and Mufasa.
Mufasa. Be careful.
Mufasa and Scar, right?
Uh-huh.
And who's the main guy?
The main lion?
Yeah.
Simba?
Yeah,
Little
Simba.
Simba?
Yeah.
What about who sings Hakuna Matata?
Did the monkey sing that?
No.
No.
This is embarrassing. Guy, what should we do about this? I think that you and I have the broad strokes of an agreement in place.
Yeah.
Which is between the years of like 1999 and 2010, we were doing other things.
Yes.
We were not
watching.
You don't
like the implication that in the earlier 90s, I was still too cool for this.
I hate this. Of course I do. Of course I hate that. Of course I hate that. It's terrible.
I also really followed college basketball pretty closely back then.
Oh, I did not.
So if Lion King came out during an NCAA tournament, I was really offline.
Offline.
I was really into the Fab Five at that time.
Okay. All right. No, I'll allow it. I'll allow it. I think that it's nice that Bill Hader's getting a big check to make a movie where he just does voice work for 6 weeks.
I agree, man. I just think, who cares? Let's just all throw it at the wall.
Who cares? I don't believe you.
Do you feel like there's tension in the room today because the Andy Greenwald, John Blackthorne has become the runaway hit of the Watch's year?
Yeah.
And now you're like, God, now people are coming up to you in the street, tears in their eyes, being like, sir. Can you do John Blackthorne
no, they're like,
for my
sir,
wife? She doesn't believe me.
They're like, sir. They come up to me. They say, sir, how would you spend a day in London with me in the year 1600? See you play.
Yeah, you did it. You did it.
It's not even Shogun Day. Just warming up the voice.
Yeah.
I don't know how you... I actually don't know why I'm lashing out because what I feel now is a deeper sense of kinship with you because heavy is the head that propels the imitation from the voice box because you've been living with us for a while. You recently went on a tour of some of our nation's finest cities where rooms full of people were, you know, they were chanting for Wayne Jenkins.
They weren't chanting.
It was like, bring us Barabbas, right? But it was Wayne Jenkins.
Yeah. I listened back to it. My wife listened to it.
See, this is how I knew it's gone.
She was like, what was so funny on The Watch today? And I was like, you have to hear this. She has not watched Shogun. She has not listened to The Watch in a while.
I had a great time. You set me up beautifully. CVS thing was funny. But here's where I exist. Here's the continuum that I exist on.
Okay.
When I found out that Phoebe listened to a segment of The Watch, it blew my mind. That was like,
She sometimes does, I think.
Not to my knowledge, that was shocking. But you know, so that was during the day. And in the evenings, if I ever, and I didn't, but if I ever was like, hey girls, your dad's having a pretty good day. Because an imitation of an actor playing a character on a drama about Japan in the 17th century was well received by people on Facebook, I would rightly be laughed away from the dinner table. I wouldn't even be laughed. I would just be cold stared.
Nobody would pay attention to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm keeping my head about it. I'm a little, you know, but we have how many? We have 6 episodes left.
That's true. Once we get to the finale, I want you to really summon like a full episode of Blackthorn. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Manhunt on Apple.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Andy, I'd like to direct your attention to something that's not in front of you.
Okay.
So this is not a pop quiz. Mm. I found something in my research about Manhunt, which is a September 16th, 2008 blog post on Vulture.com by our buddy Amos Bouchard, who we used to work with at Grantland.
Yeah, Amos.
And this is back in, gosh, this was now is nearly 20 years ago. It's like 15 years ago.
16.
Where he was writing about TV at the time, and he just blogged, David Simon is making a Lincoln assassination miniseries, exclamation point. You know, Simon's already signed on for an HBO adaptation of James L. Swanson's book Manhunt about the 12-day chase for John Wilkes Booth.
Cool.
Simon's partner on the project will be Oz's Tom Fontana, who also adapted Simon's 1991 book Homicide into the NBC show. And then Tom Fontana gave a quote about September 11th and some other stuff. So it's interesting to look at this Fontana quote because he said, if you use September 11th as the touchstone, I don't want to see the story of September 11th told through Rudy Giuliani's eyes. That was a very prescient quote from him.
Yeah.
I want to see it told through the fireman and the teacher and the guy working at the bakery on the corner and the wife in Connecticut wondering how her husband is. So this is this idea of like typical David Simon, Tom Fontana, like kind of ground level up storytelling. And expansive and sociologically sort of in-depth. It's fascinating to me to now be talking to you in 2024 about this very good show on a network that did not exist in 2008,
right.
Largely on technology that didn't really exist in 2008. This series is showrun and created by Monica Bielecki, who worked on Leftovers, worked on Fargo, worked on Friday Night Lights. The first two episodes of the series are directed by Carl Franklin, one of the goats, who Andy and I love from One False Move and Devil in a Blue Dress, some feature work he did. He also directed on Mindhunter, season two. And the series stars Tobias Menzies as the Secretary of War. This set in the days after the Civil Wars kind of come to a not quite total conclusion. Tobias Menzies plays the Secretary of War in the North, Edwin Stanton. Hamish Linklater plays He plays Abraham Lincoln. And you've got this guy, Anthony Boyle, who's actually a Northern Irish actor and was most recently seen in another Apple series on Masters of Air, where he plays essentially like the series narrator and unexpected kind of standout star next to Callum Turner and Austin Butler. This guy, Crosby, who's a navigator. So he stars as John Wilkes Booth. And I don't know how helpful it is to wonder about like the different ways this story could be told, but I really like the way it is told, which is so far in the first two episodes that they've released like a detective show. So I was curious just from the starting point, what are your sort of initial impressions and what do you think about the sort of lens through which this story is being told?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's extremely well made and it's extremely grabby and engaging. And I have to say, though, one question, I'm glad you want to have a conversation about the how it's being told, not just the why or the what, because one thing that I kept thinking as I was watching the first two episodes was, I mean, I'm wrapped. I'm totally invested in this. I know very little about our nation.
I do too. I mean, I think I feel like I know an above average, I guess, amount about the Civil War, but very little about Lincoln's assassination outside of Booth.
Yes. And so I did wonder if part of my deep enjoyment and probable series-long commitment to the show is just like, wow, it's educational. Mm-hmm. Like, I usually do not watch, this is obviously a scripted series, but I usually don't, my tastes don't tend towards history or nonfiction, and I have huge gaps. And so the fact that this is a story that almost seems optimized for our era in that, like, it is a telling of massive, major, well-documented historical events, but a story, from what I understand about the book as well, that captures it in the language of a more contemporary police procedural is fantastic. Even from the beginning of the series, that I had no idea that there was a larger plot, that there was a conspiracy to kill Lincoln, Seward, right, the Secretary of State, and Johnson, the Vice President, all in the same
basically
night.
Basically a topple the cabinet, topple the country.
And I had no idea about that. So instantly I'm in a way that sort of inoculated me from some of the other stuff that may have come up, such as I was a little bit, I don't want to say I'm surprised, but I was struck by how straight down the middle an adaptation it is in terms of its storytelling. I, you know, straight down the middle is a baseball term, because I know that's what you were doing in the 90s. So I wanted to make it clear. No movement on the fastball. You know, even to the point where characters, like when Stanton's wife, who's played by Ann Dudek, who I don't think I've seen since House, is kneeling at the grave of their young child who had passed away. And they, I guess they have a tradition to go to the grave. She kneels by the grave and the camera lingers and she says, "He would be here, but he's very busy." You know, people talk to inanimate objects to move the story along. The introduction of, you know, we meet a character who is, I mean, there are no more slaves in the nation after the Emancipation Proclamation, but the character of Mary, who works for the doctor, and then she gets a little backstory. Nothing is surprising, I would say, about the construction of the show and the way we are given a lot of guardrails to understand the socio-political moment that we are being asked to enter into. I don't say that as criticism. I say it because watching it, I was like, I wonder if there was another way to do this. Not necessarily a better way. And I think this is really interesting that initially there was that the other version was not only in the pipeline, but maybe close to being made, which I guess would have been a against the great man of history version, right? Where it would be more boots on the ground, how this trickled through society.
Right.
Is that the way? I mean, that's how I read your description.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the David Simon version of this, You know what? I don't know. I found at least the first episode to be pretty dense. Of first episode of Manhunt, yes, to throw you in, you know, pretty much in the deep end. It's got a lot of flitting back and forth between moments leading up to the assassination itself, the days and weeks leading up to the day of the assassination, where they get the peace signed at Appomattox. They've mm-hmm. begun plans on reconstruction. They're getting the 13th Amendment passed, et cetera. So, like, I think it's a pretty, like, you have to be pretty attuned to the show. And I thought that, for the most part, the performances were incredibly mannered, and, like, not mannered in a bad way, but just, like, lived in and, like,
stylized.
A setting. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. I want to be clear. I didn't mean to start with criticism. I mean, I think this is an incredibly successful execution, is the wrong choice of word, but it's incredibly successful adaptation, and there's thought given to all of it. And I think, you know, broadly speaking, there is nothing wrong with celebrating what I've read is the spirit of the book, right? Which is, like, this is a genre story in a way that is also not going to shy away.
It's a detective story
from the history. I think that's great. I guess what I'm imagining, and again, this takes a work of imagination, because that version that Tom Fontana and David Simon were doing will not see the light of day. When I heard what you were saying, it made me think that they were going to do a story without Lincoln in it. That it was
ripple effects.
Lincoln's assassination is the stone you throw into the water, and then the show is about the ripples, which presumably means, and also maybe just from that same bottom-up perspective, that a character like Patton Oswalt's character, who's a cop in New York City, mm-hmm. that, you know, we're going more from that person's perspective. What is that person's life leading up to this moment? How does his life change as he becomes embroiled in federal politics at this very fraught moment? This show is being very careful to, again, in ways that only people who have made television before. There's, like, a very experienced hand here, I think, in terms of how this stuff is deployed. But so Lincoln is killed, spoiler, sorry. And then, you know, the show takes a time to do a flashback for a very Sorkin-y moment of Seward and Lincoln just tossing the baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, no wonder you were interested in, you know, in the offices being like, we won the war. Let's go see a theater play.
Yeah.
That's humanizing things. That's making us understand the emotional stakes for Stanton.
I kind of do think that when it comes to this kind of historical television, which I'm kind of making a distinction between, I guess what I would describe as narrative, it's basically nonfiction fiction. So it's taking historical nonfiction mm-hmm. and giving it some sort of dramatization and giving it some sort of serialized storytelling style. I think that's, if I'm being honest, I actually do kind of prefer watching the Stanton and Lincoln version of this. I think I do want, like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm probably only going to watch one version of this story. Like,
totally.
I kind of want to watch it, the one where the Secretary of War hunts down Booth, right? Like, not what's a baker doing.
Totally. Because you know what else, though? As you're saying this, I'm realizing, too, this classifies it differently in my brain. This is not, maybe this is just purely my experience with it, but I am going to take in and enjoy this, and I'll tell you this right now. I don't think this show is going to be on my top 10 list of the year, because I almost feel like it's like a 100-foot wave, in that I'm like, here's something else to experience and learn from and enjoy, but its aims and ambitions, and I respect it for this, are different from a show that, either as an original idea or an original take on something, the work and labor of that show is like, I'm going to create the perfect Virginia cobbler who is a fictional character but feels real and is an avatar of the hopes and dreams of a nation at this fraught moment.
Yeah.
That's different storytelling muscles, you know? And I love shoe work, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like I would already be in on that show. But that's different. And I think that I do weight these things differently, which isn't to say there's not a lot of character creation and creativity being poured into this, but it just feels like a different vessel. And I like it when they know what they're making.
Yeah. So, like, I think that, you know, you have, like, period pieces that would be, a good example. I mean, Bridgerton, Downton Abbey, it's not even that they appeal to, like, one demographic of viewers or another. I just mean, there is, like, a very obvious emergent genre mm-hmm. that has come out over the last, you know, you could pinpoint it to The Crown, which is basically coming up on 10 years old right now. Or you could pinpoint it to Chernobyl, which I think obviously started.
That was only 2 years old, as far as
that's only 2 years old. That only came out 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You could maybe even say Peaky Blinders, although I would say Peaky Blinders is more of a period piece than a narrative nonfiction series. But this idea that you basically take, be it The Masters of the Air book by Donald Miller or Shogun, for instance, which is, you know, a novel, but obviously incredibly historically dense, or Manhunt, and you say, okay, so what we're going to do here is put a bunch of great actors against this stuff, and, you know, the upcoming Franklin miniseries on Apple with reminds me a lot of this. And this is something that I think Apple is increasingly making their bread and butter, is this kind of historical fiction television. There's a great GQ article about whether or not GQ, or whether or not Apple has become kind of prestige dad TV.
Yes.
And I kind of agree. You know, I mean, I think that if anything, you see this comfort level that a lot of people have with just being like, I'm just going to read about it. An interesting historical time that I find cool. Like, and there's great, great writing on that. Like, I read over the, like, last year, at the end of last year, I was reading Hellhound on His Tail, which was about the hunt for Martin Luther King's assassin, James Earl Ray. And it was, like, pretty gripping, you know? I mean, like, even knowing kind of the endpoint, like, it was a pretty amazing, that would make a really good Manhunt, you know, type show.
But I also think it's important to sort of get our arms around the idea that these are different, this is a genre unto itself, and it's very enjoyable, you know? And in a way, yes, Apple has cornered the market on this kind of dad TV, but I don't know what you would call the market that they are also interested in cornering, which is lessons in chemistry.
Right.
You know, the Hello Sunshine market, which I think there is quite and will be quite robust for them. These are genre plays, and it makes sense. I think to contrast it, instead of struggling to define it on one end, we mentioned a moment ago that Carl Franklin had worked on Mindhunter. Mm-hmm. Mindhunter, to me, is an exception in that it is based on, I think there was a book at the heart of it, right? Written by the Jonathan Groff.
It was about the character. Sort of development of the tools and teachings that they used to eventually start identifying serial killers.
And famously, you know, used real history and real people. There were actors playing actual infamous serial killers.
And
the second season was focused on the Atlanta child murders, real horrific moments in history. But what elevated the show to me into a different league was that it was, as much as it was interested in the verisimilitude of those people and those moments in that history, it was primarily driven by, as a psychological study, of the people who were compelled to devote their lives to that.
Yeah.
So it is a human story first set against a historical backdrop. Whereas this is expertly done so far through two episodes, historical drama. Now, is this show giving me a sense of the humanity of Edwin Stanton that you know, that inspired him to behave this way? It is. It's also, a quick Google search will reveal that the real Edwin Stanton did not look like Tobias Menzies.
Well,
and had quite a robust beard and was very old, you know, which I'm not saying it needed to do otherwise. Yeah. I'm just saying that
I'm actually okay with that.
Me too.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
You got a guy who looks like Menzies, and you and me are Menzies men.
We have been, famously.
When you need a man, it's why not Menzies?
Menzies Hunt, you know, would be the better name for the show. No, he's fantastic at this because he has.
But I'm glad that they're just like, we'll just give him some sideburns. But like, come on.
Yeah. You got
an angular face like that. You can't cover it up with a beard.
The face is the moneymaker for Menzies. I completely agree. It's a weird argument to be like this. I don't want anyone to be listening and think that, oh, if only current era David Letterman was playing this part, I would finally believe it. You know what I mean? Like, that is 100% not what I'm saying. Let's make this a hero narrative. Like, that's really interesting. And furthermore, this is also to the show's great credit. The history, at least as much as we're trusting this adaptation of a book that neither of us have read, based on history that we were too busy playing sports, apparently, to learn.
We're going to see Lion King.
multiple times in the theater. instead of going on dates and stuff. That it's fascinating. And it's bizarre, the history, and it's fascinating and bizarre. And you watch this and you're like, a frustrated alcoholic actor did this. And that's wild. And the other thing that I really like about the show is that it baked in from the first episode, the essential, the deeper tragedy of this event, which is something that we live with to this day, which is not that the, you know, I don't know what the latest lists are, but like the greatest president of all time or a great leader of this country was gunned down. I appreciated the...
You can have your own opinion about who the Mount Rushmore of...
Okay, we should argue about
fact,
that next slow day.
Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, but I think we should redo it.
Okay.
If I was anti... But I really appreciated the line that they give Stanton. It's very pointed in the first... I forget which episode it was. They're blurring to me, but he's basically like, we don't replace... He says to the journalist,
yes.
We don't replace presidents with coups. We replace them with elections.
Yeah.
But that the show is underscored from the beginning, not with a tragedy of one man's death, but that because of what happened, Reconstruction went the way it did.
Yeah.
And that these are things that we are living with to this day.
And I think, honestly, like there will be... I've read some interviews with Monica Bielecki, and she's talked very eloquently about like you learn about the present by studying the past. And
yes,
there's some obvious echoes to our current moment from this story and from the last election that we had and the upcoming one that we've got in November. But honestly, to me, when I'm watching a story about like essentially like a manhunt, mm-hmm, you know, I'm curious about the mechanics of the investigation and the mechanics of everybody's machinations and escapes and plans. You know, my favorite part about the opening episode is when Stanton is first starting to sort of try to trace Booth's steps. It gives you this quick snapshot, no Matthew Brady, but just like an actual intellectual snapshot of how big Washington was at the time, because they can narrow down the escape routes.
Yes.
They're like, if he was going that way, there's only one bridge and it goes to Maryland.
Yes.
You know, and it was like, that's so awesome. Like, think about how hard it must have been to basically do this kind of thing with no cameras and no phones and no...
As a small counter, when you're leaving DC, you can pretty much narrow it down to Maryland or Virginia. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's probably more than one
bridge.
But,
like, what part of... Like, there's only, like, however many roads, you know? Like, it is 1865. Like, they're not like, you know...
I'm here for a talk about the Delmarva region's...
Have you spent a lot of time in the DMV?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. You know, I'm Rehoboth Beach gang for life. It's a nice spot. Also, by the way, we should say, speaking of East Coast geography, the other reason I like the show is Monica Bielecki is from Philly.
Could
you tell?
Really eating right now. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
About our people finally getting their fair share of the pie? Come on. That's great.
Yeah.
She went to Masterman. Good for her. It's great.
That's awesome.
Maybe she'll talk to us about it. Yes, the specifics of an investigation, but also it's wild how small everything was. Because, yes, the country was smaller. There were fewer states. There were fewer people, et cetera, but there's still enormous amount of land here. And the stakes are still enormous. And the fact that there were just essentially a couple people and the president's going to see a play is
wild. Well, it's also
wild.
It just speaks to like the lack of entertainment options. Because, Booth doesn't even have his picture up in the theater. He's not, he's like basically known for like smaller parts.
Stunt work.
Yet like at bars and stuff, if he's like, I'm John Wilkes Booth, people are like, God damn, you're John Wilkes Booth?
People are. So what do you think is the contemporary and analog for him? Because
it would be like a dude on CSI or something. It would be like the third tech on like, and it would just be like, man, I've seen this guy on TV.
I don't know. It felt more like
YouTube. We got Alfie Singer over here.
That's what it's like. It felt more like YouTube fame to me in the sense that they're like, I know you. Wow. But nobody respects him.
Yeah, because
they
know said him. That he's into like, when they were like, he's into stunts. I'm like, oh, like Mr. Beast? Like,
that's a name I learned 10 days ago. I was going to throw it out. Wow, you're going to get all the youth cred now on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's tons of youth cred. Two guys in their 40s talking about Lincoln.
They love it. Wait, do you feel...
Will you title this, Does Lincoln Deserve to Be on Mount Rushmore? Or is Manhunt a Mount Rushmore Lincoln show?
Kai, are we finally our truest selves now that we're just talking about this?
Gotta lean into the dad core.
Well, I feel like
it's
welcome.
Very dad core.
Welcome, brother.
It's very dad core. Do you find yourself more drawn to historically set period pieces to television shows, historical television shows that are dramatizing something that you're very familiar with or that you feel like is like something you're very interested in? So, like, for our purposes, maybe it would be the Cold War, or World War II stuff that I think we probably are pretty well versed in. Or would you rather watch something that is that slice of life or that untold story of something from the perspective of the kind of people who are usually ignored by history, be it, you know, because of cultural reasons, socio-demographic reasons, racial reasons?
Yes.
That like Would you rather kind of just, if you're going to sit down and you're going to watch Masters of the Air, do you want to watch it from the perspective of the pilots or the mechanics?
It's a very good question. If I would even...
I think I want to be somebody who says I want to see it from the perspective of the mechanic, but ultimately, if I'm going to watch 10 hours of Masters of the Air, it's like I want to see some pilots.
You want that Howard Zinn packet.
That's...
Howard Zinn pouch.
That is a good... That's the David Simon show.
Yes. That is it.
What about the guy who was working at the tavern during Masters of the Air?
But that's why I keep trying to articulate... It's weird to say hierarchy, but that's the distinction for me. And I'll just keep saying it because I feel bad. I don't mean this in a critical way. I think that Monica Bielecki and her creative team like embraced what may end up being the best version of this show. But I was watching this and I was like, I am really riveted. I am really interested in this and I'm learning a lot. I also spent some time thinking about The Good Lord Bird, the Ethan Hawke-led show that was on Showtime a couple of years ago, or even Barry Jenkins' Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. These three shows could not be more different in their intent, in their artistry, in their scope, in their creative purpose. Best case scenario, they're speaking to each other and helping create a fuller picture of an era in American history of which I think, clearly continue to be woefully ignorant. But there were moments in this show where I was finding myself thinking fondly of The Good Lord Bird, just in terms of its ability to spend a little time with quirk, with the sort of things that can only come from fiction, honestly. But I don't want this show to be different. I don't want this show to not exist. I think it's impressive. And I think I should also be honest, like as a prestige dad myself, mm-hmm. I seem to have been born without the gene of just like, the clock has struck 42 on my life. Time to start reading Taylor Branch books. Like, I am not reading Master of the Senate. I have somehow... Maybe that era is still forthcoming for me.
I don't think it will.
But it might not.
I think that you're like, what I want is... I want an Italian man mm-hmm. to smoke cigarettes for 57 pages and then have an affair.
I mean, wow. When you're known, you're known. Yes. And so, if I am not going to have that time of my life where I'm like, oh, fantastic, another book about the House of Representatives in the 1920s, thank God I have these shows.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like a lot of things, I feel like I've lived my life being like, I'll get smarter soon. Or like, I'll figure this stuff
out
later.
That is the hard part, right? But it's like when you're like, one day when I learn Portuguese, it's over.
You're not going to bait me into this. Canonically, we have been speaking Portuguese this entire podcast.
That's true.
You're just, sorry, it's your fault you're hearing it in English.
I think that's it for me today.
You're tapped out.
Well, I just have no other content on Manhunt. That's the show we watched this week. We have a very, very, very busy Thursday, though.
There's a lot of stuff coming up. Top Chef is back.
Shogun.
Yeah.
Top Chef. Three Body Problem.
Oof.
All dropping Wednesday or, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
What is your... So we know where you're at with Three Body Problem. You're already...
I'm pro.
...committed and you're in. We have not watched this week's Shogun yet, but nope. I look forward to more Tremors of the Earth. And how are you feeling about Top Chef? New host? New energy? Midwest?
I'm very excited. This has been a very tough Survivor season for me. So I
really?
Need a reality show, reality competition that I'm invested in.
How has it been tough?
They've now fully expanded Survivor episodes to 90 minutes.
I was reading this. There's, by the way, we didn't cover this, but Joe Adalian in New York Magazine had a very long interview with George Cheeks, who is the head of
Mr. Cheeks,
the famous rapper, yes, from the Lost Boys, I believe.
I thought you would laugh way more weird, at that.
It took me a second. I was like, are we really, you want me to do a freaky ta voice?
It's like 52 minutes into this pod, we can make a Mr. Cheeks joke.
I feel like it would be incredible if that's who Joe Adalian got on the phone with.
I wanted to bring it full circle. I wanted to start the pod with Kenny Pickett and end it with Mr. Cheeks.
If you want to talk about 90s hip hop, we could talk about that. I had the song The Next Level by the group The Alcoholics playing in my car this morning when my daughters got into it. They were appalled. Like moral majority.
That's when you should have taken the chance to tell them about your viral fame because of John Blackthorne.
Yeah, I agree with you. Anyway, New York Magazine thing being like the future of CBS, and one of the pieces of it is that like it just works for them to have two 90-minute reality shows, and that's a night of television.
It's not that Survivor has to be shorter. Mm-hmm. I mean, so now once you get to, it's on for 2 hours of the evening, but it is 90 minutes in the actual broadcast time. And maybe it's just because it's early on in the season, so there's still just like a lot of loose like narrative threads for the show. But yeah, it's just they spend like 25 minutes dicking around at camp, and then the challenges are super long.
So it's like
I just haven't been enjoying
it. It's made it worse by giving us more.
Exactly. There is an art to having like a 42-minute episode of Survivor.
For what it's worth, Top Chef is long now too.
I'm aware of that. That's why I was just saying. I'm not judging.
It might be too much of a good thing.
Well, I just like there to be like a rhythm to an episode, you know? I like banter, challenge, over.
How much of it though is dependent?
Banter, challenge, tribal is my Survivor, and I like
it's also our podcast.
I like quick fire. I like banter, quick fire, and then the immunity challenge to be the last part of the Top Chef episodes.
Immunity challenge sounds like 2020. It's interesting phrasing. I think that what I'm interested in, we'll talk about this when we watch the season, it is cast dependent. Maybe all these shows are. Meaning that the incredible World All-Star season, you could have given me 90-minute episodes of, I think, because you would have gotten more detail about the cooking, more time with these people who were all pretty exceptional and interesting. But if this, you know, we're back to a more traditional season, all new chef testants, and if they can't carry the water, let alone boil it, I don't know.
Imagine if you couldn't boil water, but you were on Top Chef?
That would be an elite confidence play. Like just serving crunchy pasta.
Just sitting there listening to Mr. Cheeks.
Yeah, but I imagine you like with great fanfare being like, behind, and you take out the completely cold chicken from the unheated pot. You're like, can I get hands on this? And they're like, it's not clean.
It's like cross-contaminated, dude.
We cannot touch this. Can I preview this week's Stick the Landing? Because this is what people wait for. We do the finales pod talk at the end of...
Yeah. I just don't know why you don't tease it in the beginning of the episode.
Maybe my friend doesn't tee it up for me.
I've tried teeing you up 2 out of the last 3 weeks, and you're like, oh, we just have to talk about it now. Oh,
why is my father doing a podcast with you?
It's the finale of Stick the Landing.
It's the season finale.
Yeah.
So there will not be a Stick the Landing podcast episode about the Stick the Landing podcast. This is a season one finale. So we'll be taking a couple months off. I'm looking at Kaya, but we'll be back at some point. We have a cast member from Manhunt.
Matt Walsh.
Which I didn't know. I meant to tee that up. I thought that was exciting. This is one of the ones I most wanted to do. This is the 80s weirdness episode.
Yeah.
Where we're going to get into what finales were when you and I were
like
growing
Newhart
up.
Like Newhart and
stuff
like
that. Which are weird. St. Elsewhere, Newhart, Alf, Dallas. You do not have to watch any of these to prepare, although all of them are available on YouTube. A very fun talk with our pals Tim Simons and Matt Walsh, who were, of course, on the television show Veep, which had an excellent finale itself.
And then they have a podcast themselves.
They have a podcast called Second in Command. Matt is now a racist Confederate doctor on television as well. So, you know, the great work goes on. But this is a really fun one. I'm excited for this. That drops Wednesday.
Congratulations on all the work on Stick the Landing. And congratulations to Kaya and to Kai. Everybody worked on the show. I think that's just it was just a delightful pod to listen to.
Thank you. I'm going to re-record some of the episodes as John Blackthorne.
don't tease people.
I'm excited for the clicks. You know what I mean?
All right. It was great to see you this Monday.
No, it's always great. It is an honor, and I'm going to go watch a lot of television.
Bye, guys.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.